Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get we into it.
Well, you're involved now as well. So yesterday's show, there was nobody here. You were stuck in an airport in Canada somewhere.
That's right.
Everybody else was stuck somewhere in Mobile. Steve is stuck in Disney World. It was just me. Me sitting
stuck
here.
Stuck in Disney World?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he chose voluntarily to go there. Yeah. But at that point, you're stuck. You're contained within the Magic Kingdom. So it was just me. So the draft show from yesterday didn't happen, but it's going to happen today.
With PFF's number one draft analyst.
With PFF Seth. Seth Galina is going to help me talk through some draft stuff. Good news for Seth is there was some actual NFL news between the last show and this one. So we get to start off talking about that. We're going to talk about Tom Brady's second retirement, the coaching hires that have been made, and then we'll get into some draft conversations. We're going to talk about edge rushers largely today. Will Anderson, obviously from Alabama, being the primary guy we're going to focus on. But before we get into that, it's a nice little talk about what happens in your life. You know, you get stuck in an airport. I almost witnessed the end of the world yesterday as a substation that's literally 50 feet from my front window caught fire, I guess, but looked like it was about to explode. And the noise out of this thing was insane. You look at the sort of news reports now, there's one of them that has pictures of it from the middle of the city, from like here. It takes me 20 minutes to get in from my house to this office door to door. And there's a picture taken from somewhere in the city center of like light in the sky of this thing going up.
But
it
like
was absolute nuts.
Green, like bright green light.
Yeah. I mean, I look at that. That's it off in the distance. That the source of that was literally 50 feet from my front door.
No, it really, you said this to me before, but so I'm going to steal your point here, but it really does look like in Ghostbusters when they let the trap go.
Yeah.
They let the containment unit go.
Right.
And then all the pink goes up in the sky. That's the same thing.
That's exactly what it was like. And like there's videos about it you can find on Twitter and stuff. They don't do justice to the noise this thing was making. Like, I didn't realize until looking out the window what the hell it was. It sounded like somebody was running like an excavator right outside the house. And there is construction like on the next street over. So I'm like, because we lost power for a minute, obviously, as well. And I'm like, did those idiots like run over an electric cable or something? Is that what happened? And then looked out the window. I was like, oh, no, actually,
the end of the world.
We're about to die is what's going on here. But then they shut it all down and we were fine. Weirdly, so apparently like 2000 people lost power or something, and we didn't, despite being 50 feet from the thing. So I don't know, like everybody that way or something must have lost power, and this way is a different subdivision or whatever. I've no idea how that works.
Do you want me to explain substations and
yeah,
how power works?
Do.
No, I can't.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know anything about
I figured that was.
I was hoping you would say no, right? And then we could end it there, and I wouldn't have to look like an ass.
No, but I was actually curious. So yeah, that'll learn you. Other thing we need to point people to, we are still raising money for the latest charity thing. I've been working this morning on actually the logistics of getting the thing done. But it's my pinned tweet at PFF_Sam. We'll throw the link into the description of this podcast as well. We are trying to raise money for Meals on Wheels. How much have we got raised right now? We've got $1,740. We have a $2,000 goal. Obviously anything above that is fantastic as well. Once we get that done, we are going to film Steve try and replicate rugby skills as given to us by professional rugby players. I have that in the works right now. I'm trying to work on a kind of, I figure like a uniform sponsor as well. You know, I was just going to buy him like a training jersey from somewhere, but I'm like, no, you know, let's see if we can get a team involved in this and actually get him some real swag.
What skills are we talking about?
It's a little bit TBD because they're busy. You know, the Six Nations starts, I think, this week. So I'm kind of like, here's roughly what I was thinking, but go nuts. Like, if you've got any ideas, fire it in there and I'll take whatever you can give me. So I'm thinking spiral pass from the hand at a target because, you know, you got to hit something with it. Otherwise, what's the point?
I believe in Steve for this one. I do.
Just the spiral pass.
I believe he can spiral. I can do it. I think he can do it.
Because it's getting more tricky from Danny. Then the next one is a drop kick.
I don't believe in
Correct.
Steve.
Claiming the high ball. So, you know,
but Gary being Owen. Lifted, though.
No. Like,
oh, just claiming the high ball. Yeah, so I get
boot
that.
Boot up in the air. Ball's coming down. It's going all over the place. You got to go up and claim it, you know, from a height, which he should be have an advantage of. But whether he can track the ball or not is another matter. A sort of scoop and score type of deal. Somebody kicks the ball through, grubber kick, it's bouncing all over the place.
He's
you got to run
tall.
Through,
He's too
pick
tall.
It up, dive over the line, score a try. Yeah. So, you know, there's, and then plus anything else they throw on tape. But those ones in particular, I think, is where we're starting with this. We could do the line out thing, but that involves getting like five other people involved. And
no one's going to be able to lift Steve.
Well, that's hence the five other people. And that's just too much hassle for my liking. But anyway. You want to see that, go to the link, my pinned tweet at PFF_Sam or the link in this description. Donate money, see Steve look like an ass. All right. You want to get into the news?
I was riveted by the idea of Steve looking like an ass.
Well, I looked like an ass the last time, so it's his turn.
That's true.
Tom Brady retired again. February the 1st, again. Man's like clockwork. Finishes the season. Does whatever he does to recover. And then February the 1st is like, huh, it's time to make a decision. And for the second year in a row, the decision has been, I'm retiring.
Not leaked, though. This is
correct. Correct. That's true.
Last year it was leaked.
Mm.
And conspiracy theory is that he only came back because it was leaked.
Yes. Well, did he come back because it was leaked and to essentially, you know, give Adam Schefter the middle finger? Or did he come back because he just got the itch again, decided he wanted to give it one last go around, I can win another one. I've only got this number, I can get one more. There's always one more. Or, like, what was the reason he actually came back?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably the second thing you said.
Because it
which
does
is just
seem...
Like, you get to a point where, like, it is all you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing with Brady was, after last season, it looked like he could still play. Now... A year later, we're thinking about it very differently because of how bad they were this year
at
offense in Tampa Bay. But, you know, a year ago, it was like, well, he can still throw the ball, 100 yards, and he's still got velocity, and he's still got all that stuff. He's still making the right decisions. He's still playing quarterback at a super high level. This year feels completely different based on what we saw in 2022. And I think that's where I don't think he's going to come back again.
No, but the thing that makes it so weird is that, I mean, who knows what was happening in the man's personal life, but it does kind of seem like deciding to renege on retiring cost him his marriage. And for that season, that feels like a pretty crappy bargain.
Look, clearly, like, this was going to happen no matter what. Like, you know, you get to a point like, I'm going to play the role of marriage counselor right now. But you know, you if you're at the point where this is like the thing that's like the breaking point, it's because there's a buildup of so much other stuff. Like, I don't really believe in one thing breaking point. Especially if you're Tom Brady and like your wife, you know, Giselle knows, like, you're a football player, like, you're gonna play football
and
in
crazy.
The fall, and you're a psychopath, like, you know what I mean, like, you've got into that. So I don't know if that, like, that's the reason why the marriage broke up. Him coming back, there's probably a lot under the surface there.
So then
let's get into that, though. What do you think is the real marital issues between Giselle and from your own experience?
Well, as you said, you know, it's probably not one thing. Having said that, if there is a straw that breaks the camel's back, saying, no, I'm done now, I can spend time with you, and then actually 40 days later, joke, no, I'm back.
How bad would
probably do it.
How bad do you think it was in the house, those like 40 days or whatever? Because, like, it's probably like, you know, the first week he's there doing the dishes and cooking and all that stuff.
10 days later, he's like,
it's just like, oh,
I'm
man.
Back. I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah, I think that's probably how it went.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. But then the second question is, it took 40 days last time. So does he stay retired this time, or in 50 days? Is this another conversation where actually he's like, you know what? The 49ers look like they have a Super Bowl situation. I could do that.
I feel like, do you believe that Tom Brady thinks that he wasn't the issue in Tampa Bay? Right? Like, do you believe that he's like, okay,
you
well, give me Shanahan.
Yes.
Give me those receivers. Obviously, the receivers are still good in Tampa. Give me...
He blames other people.
For sure.
Probably the coaches.
Yeah, I was going to say probably, you know, the play calling with Leftwich and the offensive line not being what he probably thought it would be, even in like the middle of August, right? Yeah. When all the injuries happened and all that stuff. So I think there's definitely a chance that he really believes in something else. Maybe it's like, hey, again, if it's 49ers with all the weapons they have.
I mean, the way that all these lunatics operate, you know, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, all of these guys, to be as good as they are, they almost have to have this blinkered, pathological belief in themselves to the exclusion of reality. And that's why they always linger too long, not long enough. Like the fact they always hang on 2 or 3 years too long because they can convince themselves that something else was the problem here, rather than like the self-evident truth of, you know what, I just suck now. And Brady doesn't suck now. So for him to take just a small step back, I would imagine it would be, I'd be amazed if he wasn't thinking, I'm still fine. This is somebody else's fault.
I just don't know, you know, watching him this year, I thought so much of that was on his relationship with the offensive line in terms of not like off the field. I just mean like on the field, like he did not want to stand there.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, okay, well, how many offensive lines are like, you know, five strong, you know, left to right. It's like the Eagles, right? Like that you could go to and like feel comfortable in the pocket. You know, San Fran's got some issues on the inside. Obviously you have Trent Williams, you're good there, but he had Tristan Wirfs on the other side. So, okay. The Raiders certainly don't have an offensive line that you would feel comfortable with, even though you'd have other things you'd like, Josh McDaniels, Devontae Adams. So like, I just don't know what team that would make sense where he would again look like even Tom Brady 2021. I just don't know what team that is. Again, unless it's the Eagles, but that's not happening.
There aren't many. I mean, that's why I think it's interesting that he decided to do it right as the sort of 49ers all of a sudden may have had a quarterback opening with Brock Purdy's injury. And now you're thinking, okay, you're right. They don't have the Eagles offensive line, but they do have the Shanahan offense, the best skill position collection of players in the NFL, and the sort of combination of that, which I think helps the offensive line a ton. You're like, sure, Brady's, it's not like you have the best offensive line in the NFL, but you do have one that looks very good because of all those other things. And it's the hometown connection, blah, blah, blah. And that's when he decides, no, I'm out. I'm done.
And you are of the opinion that it's done?
I mean, I'll believe it when we reach March the 13th and we haven't seen an unretirement, you know? Fool me once.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it yet.
I'm kind of in the same boat.
But then I thought Gronk was going to come back last year, and he didn't. So who knows? Stranger things have happened. All right, are you ready for the biggest Sunday in sports? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57, has all the Super Bowl action you need. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get in on the Super Bowl 57 excitement with DraftKings Happy Hour Super Boosts. Check the DraftKings Sportsbook app every day between 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern to see what prop bet will be boosted. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code PFF. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code PFF. Coaching hires. So let's start off with the offensive coordinator.
You don't want to talk about Arena Football League being back in 2024?
I don't, no. Kellen Moore to the Los Angeles Chargers. You, as the Justin Herbert expert in PFF, what does this do for him?
I mean, I think it's pretty good. I think they're still like, they still have roster issues, especially on offense. Offensive line, receiving, a core is not what it could be or should be, I guess. But I mean, it's hard to like not look at Kellen Moore's like statistical profile as an offensive coordinator and be like, wow, this is really, really good compared to, you know, Joe Lombardi, who, even though it was only one stint, maybe 2 years, 10 years ago with the Detroit Lions, it's not very good. Like, there's a dip in the Lions offense the 2 years or 1 year that Joe Lombardi's there. And then we see it again this year or the last 2 years with the Chargers. So Kellen Moore, I mean, that offense has been incredible. People for some reason don't want to believe it, how good the Cowboys offense has been for while Dak and Kellen Moore have been, you know, Dak's been healthy and Kellen Moore has been the OC. That offense is like number two or three in the league in many categories, and especially this season.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back sort of before you even get to the Kellen Moore plus Justin Herbert thing and say, I mean, any process, every team sort of says the same thing, right? We go away, we evaluate everybody, and then we make decisions. Any process that came to the conclusion that Kellen Moore was a problem is broken. I mean, it's wrong.
Makes no sense to me.
That's nuts. So, I mean, that's crazy. The Dallas Cowboys have absolutely downgraded at offensive coordinator this offseason, whatever they do, whether it's, you know, some new guy, whether it's Mike McCarthy calling plays, like whatever the new solution is going to be worse than having Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator. That's mind-blowing to me. Like, again, I don't know where the pressure for this kind of stuff comes from, whether that was like somebody's got to get fired because we didn't do what we wanted to do, or if that genuinely, they sat in a room, they self-evaluated, and they were like, nah, man, this guy, I mean, Kellen Moore let us down here, in which case, just like that entire process is absurd.
It's crazy to me because, you know, I know Dallas fans don't want to hear this, but like they lost to the back-to-back years in the playoffs, San Francisco 49ers. They didn't score a lot of points in either game against them. That defense is like stunningly good.
Yeah.
It's stunningly good. I know last week was, or on Sunday was a little bit of an exception, but like that defense is stunningly good. And so it's not a knock on you when you don't score a bunch of points against the friggin' San Francisco 49ers defense. So for them to look at it as a one, like two games, basically, that's what they're deciding here. It's like two games where we didn't play well. They happen to be two important games. I'm not saying they're not important games. They are playoff games. But over the course of 30 games or whatever it is, this is an awesome offense. And I'm super excited to see what it looks like in Los Angeles. Like I said, O-line has to continue getting better. The injuries were obviously a problem. You lose Rashawn Slater for pretty much the whole season. Him being back is going to help. Zion Johnson going into his second year is going to help. Finding some other places where you can upgrade, you know, the other tackle spot, the other guard spot, center, they're okay there. So, you know, hopefully that they can fix it there. But then the receiving core, it just doesn't make sense anymore, I don't think, right? Like as a skill set type of situation. Good players, not to, like Mike Williams, good player. Keenan Allen, good player, like obviously. But I think you need something more, especially for a guy like Justin Herbert. I you know, it is funny because Mike Williams is such a good player. He just doesn't seem like he fits what you'd want to do with Justin Herbert. Now, you could always add another speed guy, something like that, who isn't like DeAndre Carter or whatever, but I think that they need an upgrade there. And then you're also just getting to a situation where, I know I'm kind of getting off topic of it, but you're also getting to a situation where it's like, okay, what are we going to do with Keenan Allen? At some point, we can't, like, he's going to get to age 30 or whatever he is, and we're going to have to make a decision there. And people are talking about this year, maybe it's over. Like, he could be a kind of a cut casualty, and a lot of interesting decisions there, but this one was a good one.
Yeah, and the most interesting thing to me, I think, is that we're finally going to get an answer of how much of the sort of weird conservative type approach to Justin Herbert has been something that's inherent in him, and how much of it has been like forced upon him by the offense. Because a guy with his skill set and with his ability to make absurd throws and crazy big plays should not be leading the league with the lowest turnover-worthy play rate in the game for 2 years running. It just shouldn't happen. Like, I'm not saying that more turnovers is good, but a guy that talented should automatically be taking more chances that ultimately leads to like being good but not the best in the NFL at avoiding turnover-worthy plays. Like, he should just have more like risky throws in his arsenal.
I agree.
That the net result of which is a positive, right? Not that the mistakes going up is good, but the mistakes going up along with the big plays exploding is a good thing. It's a net win.
It's also not even like mistakes in the sense of I misread the coverage. It's really just like I took a chance.
Right.
Like it was a calculated, like I'm taking the chance because I know that if I throw a check down, we're not getting anything out of it, but I have the chance of a big play if I throw it down the field. And you look at a guy like Josh Allen, who I'm pretty sure led the NFL in turnover worthy plays and big time throws. And that offense is really, really good.
Yeah.
So I think you want to do it in that way, like you're saying. There's also just like, you know, you look at his rookie year and like he was throwing the ball down the field. There was a lot of explosive plays there. And then Lombardi came in with Staley and everything kind of changed. Sometimes I feel like Herbert is almost like too smart for his own good. He's like, I can get through all these progressions and I'll throw a check down and that's good.
Right.
It's like, okay, but you're better than that. Like you can create more than you kind of think you can in a certain degree. So I'm excited. I think there's a lot of potential here with Kellen Moore. I think the thing that I like about Kellen Moore is like they've kind of always changed what they are. Over his time, you know, with Dak Prescott, it's like, you know, conceptually in the passing game, in the running game too, they've changed a bit. I will say the one thing that the Cowboys have on their roster that the Chargers don't have right now is a good tight end room. They've had the Cowboys have been able to really get away with some really interesting stuff personnel wise and formationally with the tight ends over the past 3 years. Being able to be multiple in the run game, do some interesting stuff in the play action game. Gerald Everett, Donald Parham, that's not a great tight end room, right?
Right.
So we'll see how Kellen Moore adjusts to his personnel there.
Two more hires. D'Amico Ryans to the Texans. What are your initial thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I just talked about how good that 49ers defense is.
I mean,
it's just like the one of the best coach defenses in terms of like nobody makes mistakes. They match every route perfectly. No one makes mistakes. A lot of talent, especially down the spine, which he does not have now in Houston. You're hopeful that you kind of flip it and you say, okay, well now I my corners in San Francisco were probably my weakest spot. And they weren't bad players, you know, and they got Charvarius Ward this year, who's a pretty good player. Lenoir on the other side. But you're hoping that you're saying, okay, now my best player is hopefully a corner in Derek Stingley, and we can build the defense that way, and hopefully it works out. There's a lot of work to do, but at least to a certain degree, you got a clean slate. You're going to pick your quarterback. You're going to pick a lot of players to fill out your roster. You're going to have to do it themselves. Everything everyone says about D'Amico Ryans is that he's a good leadership guy, culture, that whole thing. So that seems to be. You know, a check, and then
he's been talked about for a long time as one of these sort of young coaches that was obviously on this pathway, like being a head coach sooner rather than later. I'm excited to see what he can do because this is the start of this Houston Texans project, whatever it's going to look like. Like they've been treading water for years now till they finally got rid of Deshaun Watson. Now they can actually deploy the kind of resources that they claimed from trading him away. They get to take their quarterback at the top of the draft. Maybe we'll see if they have to give something up to jump back up to the spot that could have, should have been theirs anyway. But I think Ryans is a really interesting guy to sort of lead that project. Then the last one is Sean Payton to Denver with obviously the complicating factor of the trade that involves in getting him, which would not have been possible, I don't think, without shipping off Bradley Chubb to get that first round pick back.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they give the first round pick in 2024. Which I say this as a Saints fan, would have rather had that pick because the Saints are getting back like pick 30, I believe. I don't think the Broncos are picking. I think the Broncos are probably not picking in the 30s next year. So I would rather that, like I said, just as a Saints fan. But like, you know, Sean Payton, his resume is stellar.
Yeah.
There's no like, and it goes further back than just New Orleans stint, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the great offenses with the Cowboys, taking Kerry Collins to the Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator with the Giants. So that, I always think with these type of situations, it's like, hey, Giants, OC, check. Cowboys OC, check. Saints, you know, OC, wasn't the OC, but like play caller right. and head coach, check. Now do it again.
Yeah.
It's like that's the thing that always scares me. The resume is perfect, right? Like you almost can't get a better resume. Do it again, buddy.
Right. But I think it is worth pointing out that, like, because I think a lot of people just go, oh yeah, he was great, but he had Drew Brees the whole time. Well, okay, two things. Number one, there's a reason he got that job in the first place where he was great without Drew Brees, albeit as a coordinator, not as a head coach. And then his record with non-Drew Brees Saints quarterbacks is insane. Like the guy wins almost regardless of who the quarterback is. Sure, you can say, I mean, obviously anytime you pair a great coach with a great quarterback, it's going to be fantastic and it's going to look better than it would otherwise. But his resume does stand up even without the Drew Brees thing. And then the second thing I think, though, is this might be the hardest job in the NFL, figuring out how to fix what we just saw from Russell Wilson.
This is why someone asked me the other day, literally yesterday, what which job like I would prefer, the Texans or the Broncos? And it's you almost want to say the Texans because you got a clean slate. You kind of mold the team in your image. Whereas in Denver, it's like,
it's a very specific task.
Good roster, though.
Right.
However, you have this glaring issue here.
It feels like those kind of scenarios you get in like football manager games or like, you know, video game where it's like, here's this ridiculously random specific. You've got 7 games left. You're down by 4 points. You just lost your star striker and you need to win, you know, 80% of your remaining games to win the title. Go. That's what has just been handed to Sean Payton. It's like, we have a Super Bowl caliber roster, a great defense, receivers, we got everything you want. Russell Wilson was great, not so much anymore. Fix it.
Yeah.
Go.
And I'm of the opinion that I don't know if there's a fix here.
Right.
That's the problem, right? Like, what would you, like, I understand that we have so many good years of Russell Wilson play, but you get to a certain age, and I don't think at some point quarterbacks after 33 or whatever, I don't think you recover anymore.
And also,
once that drop happens, I don't know if you can get back to
obviously
it.
He's been sort of on the media tour this year, and he was on Colin Cowherd's show a lot, and he was asked about this a lot. It's like, you know, how would you fix Russell Wilson? And, you know, so people point out like, oh, he told you how he'd do it. And if you listen to him sort of say what he would do, it's not the most detailed fix in the world.
It's the same thing that every guy has said how they're going to fix Russell Wilson for the past 5 years.
It's like, I'd look at what he did well. I'd go through the concepts. I'd find out what worked, and I'd run more of those. And then I would ask him, like, you know, what was he comfortable doing? And I'd run more of those. And then we'd build more of those types of things in the offense.
As if Bevel and Schottenheimer and Hackett didn't say the same thing.
But also, if that's like two things, it's not an offense.
That's the flip side. It's like you can't build a whole offense out of like go balls and stick shots, right? Like
that's your problem. So it's like, okay, that was what you say on Coward when nobody's really going to challenge you about it or like say, well, okay, let's give me a little bit more detail on that. You know, now you actually need to do it for real. And I don't know if there's an offense to be built around what he's doing well right now.
But especially if he's not going to be accurate anymore and he's not going to be able to do stuff he did outside the pocket. Yes. Like if you're not getting all that stuff, then like what is left to be built here?
I mean, the only sort of shred of optimism is that like late in the year, it looked a little bit better. Like there were some flashes of old Russell Wilson. Not much of them, but you know, like early in the season, you're like, wow, this is just not there anymore. Late in the year, there were a couple of plays here or there. You're like, okay, maybe. So I'm interested to see it. The other great thing from his point of view, obviously, is, you know, it's Denver. They're owned by the Waltons. They've given him a 6-year contract with presumably many zeros attached to it. And even if it all goes to hell in year one, who cares? That's a good payday once they fire me. So, you know, there's always that.
Going back to D'Amico Ryans, I think he also got a 6-year deal, which is like,
yeah, that's a new thing.
But good for him though, because absolutely, of what's happened the last 2 years though, them getting rid of a coach in their first year. Hey, you're going to give me that money.
Particularly with, you know, there were random sort of rumors at the start of this offseason that Nick Caserio wasn't safe, despite not really starting this thing yet. Like if that's how unstable or on shaky ground this thing is, absolutely get the 6-year contract while you can and cash in. Speaking of cashing in, Western and Southern is here to help you fix your money moves. The PFF podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group, to the point where they got a plaque on the wall. They've got a mug. They got everything. They got a helmet. I mean, this place is Western and Southern all over the place. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, draft. Since this is the draft show, let's actually talk some draft. We did this the last couple of weeks with Mike. One with Mike, one with Trevor. We're building the perfect prospect based off those kind of components that you see. So this one, we're going to start talking edge rushers. I got Mike to supply the kind of components of this, since, you know, this is what Mike does as the draft guy. And I generally agree with his breakdown. So we've got frame, size, you know, that kind of part. We've got explosiveness. I think you can throw speed into that as well. Bend, that kind of classic pass rush, edge rush, trait of being able to get around guys at weird angles. Hands, how you use your hands to dislodge blocks, get off and get towards the quarterback. And then power, brute strength. So the way we've done this before, we build one using current NFL players, and then we see what the draft class looks like. So current NFL players, I think the frame is probably Myles Garrett, maybe Danielle Hunter, these kind of super freak athletes.
Yeah, Garrett is the freak of all freaks, right? So hard not to put him in there.
So I think he's probably that. Explosiveness, I think, is probably Micah Parsons. That guy's burst off the ball is crazy. I mean, you just watch how he's destroying people for Dallas. Bend, I think, is still Von Miller. Maybe Micah Parsons is there as well. But Von Miller was like the archetype for this.
He's still playing at a high level even before the injury. We'll see what happens after the injury. Yeah. But like, he is, like you said, the prototype.
He's the guy everybody is looking for when they look for that bend. Yeah. Hands, I mean, all of these guys have good hand work. Like, that's why they're elite pass rushers. You can't really be that in the NFL without that. Yeah. But TJ Watt is probably the best proponent of that. And then I think power, Nick Bosa's just ability to drop down, bull rush, and drive you back to the quarterback is probably as good as any edge rusher in the NFL right now. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, one of the things is when you get to this level, and it's true with like any position group, when you get to this level, it's like they can all do this checklist here. You can't be a Nick Bosa unless you have all five.
I mean,
three of these guys were
defensive player of the year candidates. Yeah.
You can't be a Von Miller unless you can do all of this stuff and including, you know, play against the run too. So that's what makes you an elite player.
All right, draft class is pretty interesting. So frame, Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, he's guys, big. He's really big.
Huge. Explosiveness, we've got Miles Murphy. Bend, Will Anderson from Alabama. Classic, like he's the guy that we're going to talk about the most here. Hands, Nolan Smith from Georgia, which is good because the guy is tiny and is going to
need. Yeah, he's like 235 or something.
Yeah, and is going to need those hands if he's going to be successful. Yeah. And then power, Lucas Van Ness, who is at Iowa, right?
Yep.
So I think it's an interesting group of edge rushers this year because we have that collection alone is all kinds of shapes and sizes for, I mean, what I think is ostensibly the same position, but probably not.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's three guys who are like these big guys, like Tyree Wilson, Miles Murphy, Andre Carter from Army are like these like six, you know, Murphy is 6'5", I think Tyree Wilson and Andre Carter is 6'7". Weights are a little different. But yeah, so I'll just go through them quickly because I think that's...
Miles Murphy from Clemson.
Yeah, Miles Murphy from Clemson. So frame, Tyree Wilson, 6'7". I don't know the weight, but it's big.
He's like 275 listed. I mean, even if it doesn't end up as 275.
And like, they didn't play, like, you're not seeing him play against like all these amazing tackles, but like he did what he's supposed to do against players who are worse than him, right. And he just bullied them
ran
the whole
through
time.
Them. Yeah.
And he got moves too. Like, he's using his moves. He has an inside move, which a lot of guys don't have an inside move. They just kind of go and they kind of, that's it. So I love Tyree Wilson. I think he's a top 10 pick. Miles Murphy is so funny. explosiveness right out the gate. Explosiveness. He has a long arm move, and then you watch the next snap, and he's got explosiveness, and he's got a long arm move, and then you watch the next snap, and he's got explosiveness, and he's got a long arm move, and then you're just watching. You're like, okay, well, when is something else going to happen here? Nothing really else happens. He's got kind of bend issues. He's not very bendy at all. Like, change of direction is not great. This is a one-track pony right now to a certain degree. There's just so much to like about everything else, but there needs to be more, I think. I have Tyree Wilson quite a bit above him. Bend is Anderson just because he's the complete package. You kind of could have put him for everything but frame, baby,
right.
Maybe, because he is probably in the smaller side, but he's not small, but he's not Tyree Wilson or Miles Murphy. Complete player. Hand usage, I want to add in Nolan Smith, you know, former five-star prospect, really good player, really great hands. BJ Ojulari from LSU is also up there. He's got a lot of moves. One of the only guys you're going to see with the spin move, with this, the cross chop, the whole thing. So really like him. Power, Lucas Van Ness, it's insane. He just gets on guys, gets underneath guys, two hands, and it just runs them back into the quarterback. But I think I really like this guy. The bend is there with him too. He is an explosive. Again, like we talked about it before with the other guys, like he has all these components to be a really good pass rusher, man. And the one thing I will add against the run, Nolan Smith, and I say this every year that I watch Georgia play, I don't understand how Kirby does this every year. These guys just, they are murderers.
Everybody from that defense is good against
the run. They just hit people so hard. And so, like, I went from watching Nolan Smith against the run to BJ Ojulari against the run. Ojulari, good player against the run, no problem. But you see the difference in how they deal with specifically a guard who's pulling to kill them. Ojulari, and this is part of the scheme, so it's not like Ojulari's fault or anything, but Ojulari's taught to kind of go inside of him, kind of like be a little more finesse and come inside and make the running back bounce it to the outside. Mm-hmm. With the Georgia guys, and they've been doing it for years, and Nolan Smith is another one, they take that collision and they push that guard back 3 yards. And it's like they're like one of the few teams who does it. I mean, them and Alabama. It's incredible. Not, and Alabama doesn't really do it as much anymore. It's really just Georgia. They hit people so hard. It's super fun to watch. And they've been doing it since Kirby's been there.
Yeah, I think this is a fun edge rusher class, actually, because there's just such a wide variety of these guys and all kinds of different players. Like, no matter what type of edge rusher you like stylistically, there's somebody in this draft that fits that template exactly. I want to get on to Will Anderson in a minute because I think he's the sort of jewel in the crown of this group. But first, I want to tell you about the easiest and most fun way to spice up football season. It's Underdog Fantasy and their Pick'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with a higher or lower total than that number in this week's game, or the Super Bowl as it is, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your pick'em entry, get all your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. It's simple to get started. Just head to underdogfantasy.com or download the app, sign up with promo code PFF, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. Will Anderson. Will Anderson is one of these guys that has been talked about as being... Actually, no. Before we do that, we're going to talk about who actually needs an edge rusher in this draft. Let's start with that. So we get this team needs season. Obviously, free agency is coming before the draft, so some teams will tick off needs before we get there. It's not a great free agent class.
And
I don't mean for edge rushers. Yeah. I mean, like, across the board, there isn't an awful lot. So when we talk about team needs now, generally, you can probably assume that it applies to the draft because there simply is not much, I think, that's going to really get addressed when it comes to free agency. Depth, you know, additions, rotations, whatever. But I don't know how many teams are, like, fixing legitimate problem areas with free agency. So I came up with 5 teams, I think, that make a lot of sense for needing edge rusher help. Let me see if you agree with them or if you have ones that you think are additions or subtractions or whatever. Arizona, J.J. Watt, is retiring. J.J. Watt was sort of moved to the interior in Arizona anyway, but he was their primary source of pass rush. Marcus Golden is a fine pass rusher as part of a rotation. He shouldn't be leading the line for you. The Cardinals, I think, desperately need some pass rush. Atlanta, I mean, they need everything on defense. They had the second worst pass rush in the NFL, second worst pressure rate. They need an edge rusher. Chicago, they had the worst pass rush in the NFL. Nobody on that defensive front was making any kind of hay. They need somebody. The Rams, if they're going to get Aaron Donald back, who knows? But
they need to get younger.
Either way, they need an impact player up front, particularly on the edge. And then Seattle, Uchenna Nwosu, I think, did a good job this year. He was an impressive player. They could really use somebody else on the other side, some other source of pass rush. I think they equally could use just an interior defensive lineman, but I think they definitely make sense for an edge rusher.
Yeah, all these guys, Falcons just feel like they haven't had anyone for years.
They haven't.
let's go get somebody finally. And then the Seahawks, I think, it would help them round out what could be I still believe in that defense. I think there's some really good players, but I think it would help them to round out, because like Nwosu would be a great number two.
Yeah,
but he's not a great number one.
Right.
So that's the issue. The Cardinals, like you said, just have no one. Zach Allen's a good pass rusher from the interior, though. You don't have an edge guy. The Rams, by the end of the season, were playing me and you at edge, so like that's a problem.
And they were somehow more effective than when they had Aaron Donald out there.
So I agree with all that stuff. I mean, my bias is going to show here, but I do think the Saints are in an interesting position here.
Probably losing Marcus Davenport.
Cameron
Jordan getting older.
Cam Jordan not, like, it might be the final decline here for Cam Jordan. Great career, though, for him to only decline in his 10th season or 11th season or whatever. So they need Lucas Van Ness. They're not going to get him. But
like, I mean, that's the sort of one caveat. You're not going to, I think, fix a unit in free agency, but you might suddenly require players after free agency. Like the Vikings have Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith. Both, I think, those guys combined for like 150-something pressures. Either of them going to be there next year? Like they could lose one or both of those guys in cost-cutting measures or restructures or whatever. They could all of a sudden have an acute need at edge rusher.
That would be so rough for them.
Yeah.
They can't afford to lose either of those guys, man.
So I think there's teams that don't need one right now, but could actually end up, by the time the draft rolls around, having a pretty acute need at edge rusher.
Yeah, and like the thing with edge is like in the draft, then we just kind of at this point are pretty sure we have a pretty high hit rate on draft prospects, just because a lot of the metrics from us, from other people, kind of carry over college to the NFL. So like that's why you pick these guys and you're like, we feel comfortable taking them. We know what we're going to get, even if you have needs at other positions, whether it's corner, safety, linebacker, whatever.
Yeah, it's becoming one of the, I don't want to say easier to predict positions, but it's becoming a position with one of the highest sort of strike rates or translatable skill sets. It's been right from the sort of outset, the position where PFF, like really elite PFF grades, translate the best. The guys that have graded off the charts in college have generally become very good NFL players and quickly as well. Guys like, you know, Bosa's and Myles Garrett. And it's not like it's revolutionary. The PFF was the only person that saw those guys coming, but it's another data point that says that when those guys are really dominant at this spot in college, they translate quickly. I think there is a degree of comfort for teams drafting edge rushers high, particularly. So let's talk about the one we expect to go the highest this year versus last year. Will Anderson from Alabama, a guy that I think has been talked about since he was there at Alabama as being, this guy's going to be amazing. He will be the top edge rusher in his class, basically from day one. And he's done nothing in his career to change that narrative. Like he's just been that guy all the way through. First of all, what do you think about him? And then how do you compare him to the two guys from last year, Trayvon Walker, who ended up going number one overall, and Aiden Hutchinson, who people thought would, and then ended up going two?
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier, Anderson is really the complete package of explosiveness, bend, hand usage, some wiggle. I feel like I'm not seeing it often enough on tape, where it's like he's getting into the chest of an off, you know, he's letting the offensive line and offensive linemen get into his chest or he's getting into their chest and they're just kind of like mashed up against each other in a lot of reps. And you're like, okay, well, do something. Like, just... But I seem to be like one of the few people who believe that. So, and I don't trust myself enough to be like, okay, that's he's clearly not a good player. Like, he's obviously a good player and good against the run. He shows it. I just felt like it wasn't enough. Whereas like when we compare it to last year's class, like Hutchinson in his last year showed it almost every snap. Like, it was incredible. And he didn't have the bend. But he had so much other stuff that it's like, it's okay. And I also have this issue with bend because it's like, there aren't many guys who have the bend that we think about when we want to talk about bend.
Right.
Like, it's Von Miller and that's it. Like, it's just like, there's not a lot of guys who have that, and that's okay. Like, you can be a successful player in the league without having Von Miller's bend and that ghost rush and all that stuff. Like, it's okay. And that was the thing with Hutchinson last year where it was like, okay, well, does he have the bend to be an NFL player? Well, he's got everything else. So, and it's worked out so far in year one. The Walker thing is still a whole thing.
I think it's a fair criticism to look at Will Anderson's career, given the skill set that he obviously has, and say, obviously he was amazing. Obviously he's really good. Could it have been better?
Yeah, that's kind of why.
And that is backed up, I think, with PFF grading, where so you look at Anderson's career and it's been good every single year, grades of 79 up to 89.8. Pass rushing grades have always been good, 60 pressures, 82 pressures, 65 pressures. The pass rush grade, though, topped out at 85.8 this most recent season. Now, you go back and you compare him to those real blue chip guys we've been talking about, Nick Bosa. I mean, his worst season was basically that. His worst season was 85.0. His best seasons, or two of them, back to back with the same grade, 92.5, albeit one of them was an injury-shortened year. But that's a pretty big jump. Like, it's just that difference, right? From real blue chip, can't miss, no qualms whatsoever, he will be amazing at the next level, to, well, you obviously have the same kind of talent, but this is a little bit different. There's a little bit of a gap between what you were capable of and what you actually did.
That's exactly how I feel, which is why I'm like, I don't see him as like the number one non-quarterback on the board.
Right.
He's close, but I don't see him like that. And that's kind of the difference. And then Walker is just like, how did that even happen? I don't even understand how.
One thing that is kind of fascinating about Anderson, though, is that he has an absolute ton of sacks relative to his pressure rate, which in small sample sizes, I think is generally just a noisy thing. Like, sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. The longer you extend out the sample size, the more I think there are players that are somehow good at quote unquote finishing. Yep. Like Chandler Jones spent an entire career getting a disproportionate volume of sacks relative to the number of times he won. When he won to the point where he could get a sack.
The question is always kind of going back to the same thing, which is like, okay, well, how many Chandler Joneses are there?
Sure. But my point being, Will Anderson could offset.
He could be, I think, for sure.
But he could offset a lot. He could offset a lot of that gap between him and Nick Bosa in down-to-down performance and production if he's one of those guys. Like, if he is a guy who maybe doesn't win as much as he should, given his skill set, but is more likely to win in a way that actually gets him a sack at the end of it, that might bridge that gap. And that's the kind of gap that wouldn't necessarily show up in PFF grading, because we're only going to give you so much credit for the sack, even if it's a great play.
Yeah, I mean that would be where I would say, if that's the case, then he's back up there as like a top, maybe number one overall type player, right? If you can convert pressure to sacks at a rate, right, like you said, Chandler Jones, for example, in throughout the peak years of his career, then you're a number one pick type of player.
So the Trayvon Walker thing is interesting because, I mean, it's a classic. It's the kind of pick that almost doesn't happen anymore.
It's like a
throwback to when people just looked at the absurd workout numbers and went, draft that guy high, quick. Like an Al Davis move.
Yeah.
Where he would just say, who ran a 4.24? That's who we're taking in the first round. Now, to their credit, this was genuinely unique. Like, there has never been an edge rusher athlete with the composite athletic profile of Trayvon Walker. Never. And people kept comparing him to guys like, well, maybe he's the next Danelle Hunter, who had a really good athletic profile but didn't have the production in college. Even Danelle Hunter did not have the complete check every box physical tool set that Trayvon Walker did. Like, genuinely has never come around before. And therefore, you can't point to a guy that has that skill set that has failed. Now, equally, you can't point to one that succeeded either, because it's never come around. But it makes it very difficult to sort of outright say, well, this is just an idiotic move. Because the immediate comeback is, this guy has never come around before, ever. There has never been a guy that looked like this physically come into the league.
My pushback to that, and I've been Trayvon Walker pilled this season. Like, I think he's going to be a really good player. I just think it's so funny when we look at it, like, no one was talking about him as a first-round pick. We're not even talking about number one overall. We're talking about, like, a first-round pick. No one's talking about a first-round pick. And then it's just like, you know, we get into this idea, once one person says it who has a lot of power in the league, and then it gets to people in the media, and then it becomes a thing where, I'm hearing Trayvon Walker, and then all of a sudden he's on people's mock drafts all of a sudden. Like, but it's funny to me, because it's like, you look at it and, like, all these people who are doing draft work before draft season, and there's a lot of people. It's a big industry. They don't have him anywhere. Then all of a sudden, all of a sudden one of the big guys puts him on the mock draft, and it's like, now everyone else, I got to reevaluate this stuff. And like, oh, well, yeah, now that I'm looking at it again, I get that was me probably.
But I think it felt like people were talking themselves into Walker in the first round based off, like, the tape and what he was potentially capable of and all these things. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, people start hearing, this guy's going to go high.
Yeah,
like, so not forget first round. Like, this guy is going in the top five somewhere. And then the top, like, the number one overall was coming down. Like, what?
If the draft was, like, the day after the season ended, or it's like February 1st, let's say.
Yeah.
He goes, like, 34th overall.
Right.
And it's like, how?
Yeah.
So, to me, the Jaguars, like, overpaid for that then. Because you probably could have got him at, like, 23 when they had their second pick or whatever.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's always the interesting part of this is, like, if you're that high in a guy, like Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
No other quarterback went until the third round. Everybody hated this quarterback draft class. You were the only team that jumped into one in the first round. How late could you have waited? Like, was anybody else going to take any quarterback before the third round? Like, you know, I talked to people in the NFL who said something along the lines of, all these guys stink. The only one that even has a chance is Kenny Pickett. And I don't like Kenny Pickett, but he's just if you have to pick one of these guys because you have nothing else and you need a rookie, take that guy. But I wouldn't, you know, bet the farm on it or anything. So it's like, did Pittsburgh simply needing a quarterback have to take Kenny Pickett at 20, or could they have waited a round? Could they have waited two rounds and still got the guy?
That's exactly where I am with Walker. Anyways, we don't have to talk about Walker, but yeah.
So I think obviously both of us would have Trayvon Walker behind Will Anderson, and we had it behind Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Hutchinson versus Anderson is a more interesting conversation to me, though. So Hutchinson was another one of these guys who I didn't love him as a prospect last year. When you were talking about Murphy, who everything is the same win. Every one of Aiden Hutchinson's wins was the same. It was all the inside move.
Man.
Yeah.
Man.
And it's like, okay, this is great and it works, but...
Because you were afraid of what I said. You were afraid of, could he get around the corner?
Yes.
On NFL tackles.
Exactly. It's like, what if an NFL... Also, if you're never going to threaten the outside, like, the inside disappears. Like, if an NFL tackle is not concerned about your ability to beat him around the outside, he's gonna cut off the inside move that you're winning with every time. And then if that disappears, what have you got left? But he had sort of pretty extensive career, and then it was only the final season where he put those kind of Nick Bosa-like PFF grades and pressure rates and all that kind of stuff together, but with that added caveat of almost every win was the same. So,
but there were a lot of them.
There were. So I obviously had him as the number one edge rusher in that draft.
Yeah.
Way ahead of Trayvon Walker, but I would have had him sort of a step below the guys like the Bosa brothers and Myles Garrett and that kind of thing. So I think it's an interesting comparison with Anderson, who I think has a much more well-rounded skill set, but actually didn't necessarily hit that one season high of pressure rate and PFF grade that Hutchinson did.
Yeah, that's it. And like, I also thought that Hutchinson was better against the run too. He really got some knockback when he was, you know, guys were coming to block him, you know, front side runs that I didn't see as much with Anderson. Yeah, but it goes back to me the same thing. It's like, okay, well, is it the Hutchinson lack of bend? Did he make up for it in enough other ways? And I feel like he did more than Anderson in the kind of the reverse.
He also had the opposite of the Trayvon Walker thing, where he showed up with a preposterously T-Rex arm length. Like, for a guy, I think, I forget what the actual number was, but I'm pretty sure he and I have the same length arms. Jeez. And he's 6'7". That shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be possible that a guy 8 inches taller than me has the same arm length. And as soon as you sort of saw that, you couldn't unsee it. Like, all of a sudden you're watching his tape and you're like, this guy's body type is ridiculous.
18th percentile arm length.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Right. So all of a sudden you're like, okay, on the one hand, you've got this super freak that we've never seen the likes of in NFL history that was built in a lab.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've got the guy who's a much better pass rusher, just showed up with arms that belong to a guy that's 5'11". Like, what the hell is that? Which doesn't help, again, the idea of you're on an island against NFL offensive tackles who have length. Like, does your 6'7" length immediately get negated with your stumpy little T-Rex arms? Yeah. That didn't help his case. Right.
I just finished beating Lego Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
On Xbox. And I've been doing a lot of dinosaur YouTube watching.
Okay.
T-Rexes, contrary to Jurassic Park, not blind. In fact, probably had very good eyesight.
Well, they weren't blind in Jurassic Park. They were supposed to be blind to
like movement. Yeah. Well, basically. Like, yeah. Anyways, the point is they have very bad eyesight in Jurassic Park. And
which, by the way,
true.
When you think about it, makes no sense.
No, it
right?
makes
because
no
most
sense.
Of the things in the landscape are stationary objects. You're telling me that they can't see the mountain standing in front, like the tree that they're about to walk into if it stays
great
still.
Great plot point, though.
If there's no wind, right? This thing is just going to barrel headfirst into an oak tree. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it is a big brain, and actually, like, when you look at fossils of T-Rexes, big eye sockets.
Yeah.
So clearly a big optic nerve, I guess. I don't know. I'm
right.
making stuff up here. Anyways, good plot point, not a real thing.
Well, only a good plot point until you think about it for 3 seconds. You're like, hang on, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, they all would have died. Yeah. Like, they all would have been like, you know, Alan Grant would have been like, don't move. And then that's it. The end of the movie would have been there.
You say it
would have
John. Yeah, it just goes down the line, munches
down
them all.
The line, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't have gone well.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Will Anderson against Jalen Carter. So edge rusher versus interior defensive lineman or interior pass rusher, because that I think has become an interesting topic point in today's NFL. Like, what if you can only have one? And obviously, if you can only have one, is not a good starting point necessarily. But if you can only have one, do you want the edge rusher or do you want the interior disruptor?
Well, it's like, obviously, you know, you can hear the way I'm talking about Will Anderson, where it's like, if I'm going to pick between these particular two players, like, I'm going to lean Jalen Carter. He's like unblockable. He's so good. But then I think the more interesting discussion, like, let's say they were equal prospect, like you said, is like, where do we go from here? And it's like, that is probably still edge right now. But I don't think it's that far of a gap.
Yeah.
And I can't get over the Eagles last week just dominating because of the 49ers had to play a not very good interior tackle. You know, Eric Armstead, good player. Whoever they played next to Eric Armstead, not a good player. That's the difference in the game.
Yeah. I mean, Javon Kinlaw got annihilated in that game.
It's bad.
Conversely, you've got the Eagles, who have like the best pass rush in the NFL. I mean, without one of those superstar guys, like Hassan Reddick's been really good this year, is a really good pass rusher, but they don't have a Micah Parsons, a Nick Bosa, a Myles Garrett, a Chris Jones. Like, they don't have one of that real, real top tier guy, and yet they have as good a pass rush as anybody. I think that's like, That's where you come down. Like if you have one and nothing else, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I
Miles
agree,
Garrett
I agree.
With his defensive line in Cleveland, it doesn't matter doesn't how matter. Good he is. And to the point where he gets completely ignored for defensive player of the year, whatever. That I mean, those awards come out next week, but he won't win.
He was great again this year.
Right. He has, as good a case as Nick Bosa or Micah Parsons, and that will not be reflected in the awards or the results. Aaron Donald, we've seen for years that as a one-man band, okay, he can take over games, but can they find anybody that can work alongside him? Chris Jones this year, again, defensive player of the year caliber season, but George Karlaftis, Frank Clark, Carlos Dunlap, like those guys aren't bringing enough to the table. It's not necessarily enough in games where teams take him away.
Yeah, that and like we're getting to the point where it's like tough to just, like you said, just be a one-trick D-line. Just got to have depth on that D-line. You got to be able to take on blocks, different type of blocks. We're playing with light boxes, doing all that stuff. So like it's important, like all four of them. And now we're seeing five, you know, like right. You talk about the Eagles. The Eagles play a lot of five down defensive alignment. So it's like you just got to go all the way through it. And then you also have to add in having safeties and linebackers and corners and nickels. And like, that's the problem with defense, right?
So it sounds like generally you're a little bit lower on Will Anderson than I guess the general perception.
I think so. Top 10 pick. I'm not saying he's not a top 10 pick, but yeah.
And then you have Jalen Carter from Georgia who, you know, to level set for anybody who hasn't got around to college guys or whatever yet. Jalen Carter was obviously the best player on last year, 2021's Georgia defense, which was arguably the best defense that college football has ever seen. Like the one with Jordan Davis and Trayvon Walker and N'Kobe Dean and Quay Walker and everybody else they sent to the NFL. Like Jalen Carter was the best guy in that defense. Like everyone was talking about all these first round draft picks and how amazing this defense was. And then also sort of saying, but by the way, the guy that isn't in this draft is the best player in this team. That's how good he is.
Yeah. And he proved it this year.
Yeah. Without all those guys on the team. Like they sent half a defense to the NFL. And the defense was still amazing. And B, Jalen Carter was still every bit as good despite not having sort of whatever that support structure around him looked like.
Yeah. Because he just has everything you want in these kind of modern defensive interior guys. Like Chris Jones, when I watch him, it's like, and there's similarities there. I think he's obviously leaner than Chris Jones.
Right.
But it's like the ability to go both ways. I think that's, and then Aaron Donald is, well, I can talk about Aaron Donald in a second, but like what these guys have for me is an inside move that's better than anyone else. Like it, to have the quickness to not just say, I got to go on the outside shoulder and I just got to live with that. And maybe I have some hand moves. Maybe I have some explosiveness, but like that's kind of all I have because I don't have that lateral quickness. These new defensive linemen or the top ones have that in Chris Jones and now Jalen Carter. I was thinking about this, but the difference between Donald, what makes Donald like the best player of all time maybe, is that yes, he has the lateral quickness, but he's so good. He's like an edge rusher in terms of his hand usage and everything on like just getting to the outside, like on guards and stuff like that. With the explosiveness is second to none, really. So I think that's really where I see the difference in these kind of new class of edge rushers. And I think Jalen Carter is that player, man.
Yeah, Donald's hand usage has always been insane, like dating back from like to the when he was a prospect. Like that's the thing more than anything else that people overlooked when he was the 14th overall pick or something. It's like he was dominant in college and everyone just looked at size and 285 pounds and were like, well, that's not gonna fly in the NFL. And it probably wouldn't if all he had was that speed and quickness. And but he always had the ability to immediately shed a block with hands and just get people off him. And that's exactly the same now. Like if you ever make the mistake of leaving him one-on-one, the second he realizes he's one-on-one, immediately ragdolls the offensive lineman to the side and takes after the quarterback. Like I've never, ever seen a player with such an ability to instantly rid himself of a block just with hands.
Instantly.
It's insane.
You can't touch him.
Right.
It makes no sense to
me. And that isn't, I mean, it's clearly not just a strength thing, right? Because I'm sure Aaron Donald is an extremely strong man.
He is.
He is not stronger than Vince Wilfork,
right,
or like whatever gargantuan nose tackle you want to talk about. It isn't simply a product of I am stronger than you, I will grab you and throw you out of my way. Like, there's technique involved with it that Aaron Donald has A, mastered, but B, was always great at. Like, that's a, like, that's why it's one of the traits on Renner's kind of build an edge thing, and the same thing applies for interior guys, but like, it's why it's important.
Yeah, he's getting to the point where, like you said, like, he's not up for, he had a great season again this year.
I know.
No one paid attention because, like, the Rams were useless this year and had all the injuries, and it was more off the field stuff that we were interested in there. But, like, he was great again. And he's getting into that category where he could win the award each year. And it just depends on, does he have team success? So they've had team success in the past. He wins the award. He doesn't this year. He doesn't win the award, but he was just as good as he's ever been, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair thing to say that this is probably the worst season of Aaron Donald's career, or certainly the first since his rookie year, and it was still like a dominant outing.
Dominant.
Like he had 40 pressures in whatever it was, 12 games, had a pass rushing grade above 90, had an overall grade above 90. Like, he was still a dominant force, but it was a little bit of a step back from the last, like, what, 8 years of absurd play.
Yeah.
I do think that, like, Aaron Donald, quote unquote, only having three Defensive Player of the Year awards, if this is the end of his career or if he doesn't get any more, is a product of, like, voter fatigue. And we collectively, like, we screwed him. He should have more than that. I mean, he has the same number as J.J. Watt, but his career peak is twice the length. That doesn't add up. Like, at some point, we just decided to stop giving awards
exactly
to Aaron Donald for no reason.
That's the fatigue there. I also think, just, I don't want to derail this with talk of Player of the Year award, specifically Defensive Player of the Year award, but, like, we really don't do a good enough job of evaluating. And, like, you know, obviously we're trying here at PFF, but we're not perfect either. It's just, like, evaluating coverage play. Because, like, there's guys who've had great coverage years who deserved Player of the Year, but it's so hard to, like, have the stats for it.
Right.
That it's so obvious that they are. Where it's like, you know, when you get sacks and you get pressures, they're so binary. Did you get a pressure on this play or not? See it where it's like, did you cover the guy or not is so broad.
Right. I mean, I think generally one of the hardest things in football, and this is obviously relevant to the draft, is nothing operates in a vacuum. Everything has four or five confounding factors involved in it or influences in it, and trying to strip out all that stuff is really hard. And it's not possible. I mean, it isn't. Like, as much as we try to the best of our ability, that's why the draft is still like a 50-50 proposition. It's why, you know, sometimes you end up with weird statistical results when you start doing that. Like, you can't strip out everything from one thing because it's always interconnected. So,
but that's why edge, O-line, D-line is probably your best bet, because the closer you get to, like, just a pure 101.
But even, absolutely, you're right. But even then, you see the, like, when the criticism of Chase Young, it's like, well, where was he in that Wisconsin game, right? And then you go and watch the Wisconsin game and you see him being, like, legitimately triple teamed every play.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's not him going AWOL. Yeah. That's, they showed up and decided that no matter what happens, he will not have a sack in this game. And you can do that at any time you want in college or the NFL, but obviously it changes everything else you want to do. Like, remember when Jared Allen was chasing the sack record one year and he got within like a half sack of it? I think he did it against Chicago. Like, he needed two sacks or something against the Bears to beat the record. He got one pretty quickly. And then the Bears decided, we don't even care about the game anymore. Allen is not breaking the sack record in the rest of this game. So the rest of the game became about the Bears offense not letting Jared Allen get a sack. So they double teamed him, quick game, like everything. That's like, again, so the statistics change, but Allen didn't. The offense changed, and the things affecting Jared Allen changed in that game. And the same, like, with Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt at his greatness. Like, generally speaking, those guys did not change throughout their peak. What happened is every now and again, a team would roll up there and go, we are changing the other factors around you.
Every time I think about tennis. I'm not a big tennis guy. I watch when the Canadian is doing well, and Canadian tennis is very good right now. So I don't know much, but I look at a sport like tennis or—
So it's a good starting point for an analogy.
Yeah. Tennis, you talk about like video games where it's like a one person thing, like esports. I watch a lot of StarCraft, so like that's a one person thing. The same guys always win.
Right.
And tennis is obviously the best example because the same three guys have won for the past 20 years, right? And then I think about it, like the issue with team sports is like, okay, well now you're not by yourself. Aaron Donald wins the football game every time he plays.
Yes.
He wins the game of football.
More than anybody else.
More than anyone else ever. But he has won Super Bowl. You know what I mean? He has losses on his resume because it's part of a team sport. But like, he never loses. He never, like, and so like, this is like always the hardest part thing to do with team sports is trying to suss out the individual.
Yeah, and it's also why I think whatever about sort of comparing statistics for era and things, it's why it's impossible. Like, so Aaron Donald is going to go down as one of the greatest of all time. And you start then compare, where does he stack up next to Mean Joe Green or Reggie White or whatever? Like, obviously you can do it by tape if you have the tape, but if you go back and watch the last few years, people are treating Aaron Donald vastly differently to the way they treated him in the first 3 years of his career, right? Once it became pretty obvious that Aaron Donald was not just good, but like unstoppably destructive, now you get these situations. Like, you watch him play the 49ers, there's literally no chance that he can actually make an impact because every time there's a real pass play, the ball's out in 1 second. Yeah. Every time there isn't a real pass play, he's being double teamed. Like, you know what I mean? So they're literally structuring an entire game plan so that he physically cannot make a play. So when you start then compare, well, okay, he came out of that game with almost no stats. Yeah, but he didn't play worse. You know
exactly
what I mean?
They just changed. He always plays at that level.
But then when you go back and you say, well, how many times did that happen to like Joe Green or Reggie White? Like, what did the game plan to stop Reggie White look like for his career? Did they just, were teams good enough to do that at that point? Was there enough adjustment on the table? Like, you hear sort of people talk about what happened when Lawrence Taylor first rocked up. And it's like, he was so destructive because there was no adjustment for that, right? No. It's just, we haven't even considered that there was a guy good enough to make our dude on the left look ridiculous. Like, what do you even do about that? Like, oh, well, I guess we just let him destroy the quarterback every time and figure it out later. Like, I don't think, I mean, I'm not saying that Lawrence Taylor wouldn't be a great player or anything now, but I'm saying that the NFL now is a lot better prepared to slow down a guy like that over time than it was in the 1980s. And presumably even more so in the 1970s. Like, so when you're comparing these all-time greats, not only do the stats have to be adjusted for era, but you probably also have to change your notion of what was like possible in terms of opposition adjustments. Like, teams are way better equipped to take away Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt than they were back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah, football especially is the worst sport. To compare, that's it. That's the end of my sentence. Just to compare different eras. I mean, the game is so drastically different because of the structure of the sport, it not being a fluid game, I would say. You know what I mean by that, obviously?
Yeah.
The sport has changed in immeasurable ways, whereas like there's no difference in that. There's very minor differences. And if you watch a soccer game, if you watch a hockey game, even basketball, three-point line, obviously, you know, icing and hockey, red line and hockey and stuff like that, I get it. But for the back pass in soccer, like there's minor tweaks that have changed the game, but like football changes on a year-to-year basis how this sport looks, I find. So it's hard to compare.
So dragging this back to Will Anderson against Jalen Carter, where does Jalen Carter stack up next to Aaron Donald, but you know, how sort of a generational type prospect do you think he is coming into this draft?
Yeah, I think he's pretty close to, well, he's going to go one, right?
Overall?
I don't know how, like, I'd be okay if the Bears like traded back, but if they're not going to trade back, I don't love them taking a quarterback, to be honest.
So if Chicago stuck at one, they should go with Jalen Carter.
I think you just go with Jalen Carter. I think, again, it's like we're pretty sure of what, of our college to pro projections. He fits, checks every box. He's going to help your defense in a measurable way. He's not, the thing is, it's like, yeah, like I get it. Like defense requires a lot of players throughout the 11 on the field. Guys are somewhere, though.
Yeah.
You got to get at least one good player.
I've been working on the basis that I think there's almost no chance the Bears actually use that draft pick at number one overall and pick. Obviously, it happened some years, like last year, where Jacksonville had one. They had their quarterback in Trevor Lawrence already. They weren't going to pick a quarterback, and there wasn't one anybody loved.
That's the difference, right? This year, you can trade back three spots and pick up a whole bunch of draft picks.
So not just that. There are quarterbacks people like this year, and the other thing is the team sitting at two needs one.
Yeah.
So anyone else that needs a quarterback has to get to one to take theirs. So if you're the Colts, and the Colts have the added incentive of wanting to get above the division rival, but like if you're the Colts or the Panthers or the Raiders or whoever the hell needs a quarterback, you probably have to get to one to get the guy, because there's too many that are going to get picked in that top five. So I just think that there's too many things set out for the Bears to be able to trade that pick for a freaking monster haul and potentially still get a Jalen Carter
or even a Will Anderson or whatever. Like, you're fine with that.
Yeah.
That's 100% what I would do if I was the Bears.
Yeah.
100%.
But you think that
if they were to stay there, I think you can take Jalen Carter and there's no problem.
Or even just, independent of if they're stuck at one, like Jalen Carter essentially should be the first defender off the board in your eyes.
Yes. Yes. I think so. Yeah.
All right. So that's our edge rusher / Aaron Donald eulogy show.
Eulogy.
We're going to be back tomorrow and then also Friday. Tomorrow, I'm not 100% sure what the show is going to look like yet. Obviously, we don't have games to preview. So that's a good 4 hours worth of show for me and Steve taken off the table. But we'll figure it out.
Preview, USFL season starts soon.
Six
XFL
Nations.
Season starts soon. Six Nations.
We can
review Manchester United versus Nottingham Forest that's happening today.
We can get Steve to send in a travel missive from Disney World, find out how that's going.
We can review Steve's itinerary.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of things we could talk about. Anyway, we will be back tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in today, and we'll see you later.